You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada.
Today on CICK News, Maureen Nice is the chief counselor for the Haisla Nation, and for more than 10 years, they've invested heavily into liquefied natural gas in support of LNG Canada's export facility in Kitimat. They spearheaded the charge to ship Canadian LNG overseas and essentially help build the industry in Canada. Now, they are currently constructing their own LNG facility called Cedar LNG, which will be ready in a couple of years to ship its own liquefied natural gas. However, last fall, when the federal and Alberta governments signed an MOU to create the conditions that would see a new West Coast oil port, the Haisla were not impressed. They pushed back and will continue to push back on what they see as a risk they just cannot take: oil. Today, we speak with Chief Counselor Maureen Nice about why the Haisla are investing in LNG and at the same time vowing to stop oil transportation through their waters. Stay with us.
When we measure what is proposed in Arctic territory, as far as how we move forward, we basically have a line drawn in the sand, as you say, when it comes to things that will impact our ability to sustain ourselves from the ocean. If we it would be what's called a diluted bitumen line coming to the coast. And that changes the product. It puts things in there that don't work well in the water. They don't go away. They stay. So we understand that. We have very strong trading relations with our neighboring nations. And that is that's part of our culture. It's a part of our way of life. And that would be eroded. A large part would be eroded if we had tankers spilling diluted bitumen. And it's not an if, it is a when. Like, there is nothing that is written anywhere that guarantees that won't happen. So we have to assume that it will.
I know there's been a lot of discussion about the way that this came to be. It seemed in some cases to catch people off guard, this MOU, to see an idea like this right now, a concept actually moving forward, or at least that's the understanding at this point, is to an aspirational objective to see an oil port somewhere on the north coast. Where do you feel the federal government mishandled this? Because I know that you've pointed that out before, just some disappointment. What's the conversation like, and what's the relationship like with the federal government to deal and discuss some of these issues?
The disappointment came from the fact that we heard about this MOU when you heard about it, when the rest of the country heard about it, and we did not feel that that was appropriate. They kind of dropped the ball there. They had an opportunity to consult, just to say, hey, we're this is something that we're planning, but they didn't. And I think that was a big miss on their part. And you know, that doesn't mean that things would have been different. I think they would have been met with the same opposition, but I think it would have gone a long way to sustaining our relationship as we move forward with other projects. I think that's a big miss on their part.
Yeah.
So you had a bit of trust.
The Haisla had no idea that this was coming, that this might be a possibility at the time.
No, we did not. We had arranged to meet with the Premier of Alberta because we knew that she had, you know, a mandate to try to get that, to make that happen. And we had tried to preemptively meet with her to let her know our position. But the MOU came before we had an opportunity to meet. That was a bit unfortunate.
Alberta is not really looking at Kitimat as the terminus for a potential oil port.
Correct.
That's what you've heard?
Mm-hmm. I did hear that from, I think I heard it when you heard it again.
Yeah. Does it concern you? Does it concern the Haisla that even if it's not in Kitimat, in Haisla territory, are you still concerned that it might be somewhere else on the north coast?
I like I said, our trade relations with other nations along the north coast is very strong, vibrant, and it would be compromised should there be a spill that compromises any of the seafood that we harvest from this north coast area. So I am concerned.
I know that the Coastal First Nations have been, you know, quite loud on this subject as well. Is you know, are you talking to them or communicating with them, supporting those efforts? I think there's a declaration that they had come up with that they're getting signature on the North Coast Protection Declaration. In light of this idea of a potential oil port, is that something that the Haisla are looking at supporting the efforts of?
If they ask for our support in that declaration, we will support that 100%. That is a definite yes. We've met with them. I joined them in a meeting to prepare for Prime Minister Carney's visit to the North Coast. He as you know, came to Prince Rupert and consulted with the Coastal First Nations Alliance, and he was met with a lot of opposition and resistance to that potential, and we stand with them. We don't want to see that. What impacts their waters will impact us as well. So it's not it's you can't put the two apart. We're pretty much tied intricately together.
This has been stated many times, and as I mentioned, you know, even in the 70s with the Oil Ports Inquiry, the general consensus was the risk was just too high, and in terms of, you know, spill response and whatnot, is just too high. As you mentioned, you know, there's lots of people who still get their sustenance from the ocean, from the shores, and also, you know, along the coast. What is at risk for the Haisla in particular up the Douglas Channel?
Well, that is our waterway. We basically that is within our territory, and we harvest everything from that waterway. We take our ulukin. Our ulukin is a very sensitive fish. We had originally had nine ulukin-bearing rivers, and we now only have one. So we are very protective of that river. It's the Kamano River. And that would be compromised. We don't know how it would impact our salmon, but it would definitely impact any of our bottom feeders. All of our cod and our halibut would be compromised. Anything that we any shellfish that we harvest would be unharvestable. So it's I'm very concerned about that prospect of contaminating any of that.
I know during the Northern Gateway, Enbridge Northern Gateway days, that you know, the Haisla were right out in front of that as well, supporting even, you know, the efforts of groups in Kitimat with that plebiscite vote, and now, you know, seeing this take shape, there was a reason why petroleum was left off the list of things that would be products that would be exempt from the North Coast Tanker Act, North Coast Moratorium, Tanker Moratorium Act, and LNG was one of those things. What are the benefits that the Haisla are seeing with shipping out and getting into the LNG industry that otherwise, you know, wouldn't have happened with something like if there was an oil port that would put things like this at risk?
Well, the region has benefited, not only the Haisla Nation, but the region has benefited significantly around employment, contracting. Some of the revenues that have supported the Haisla Nation directly have benefited us in the ability to have a youth center built, a health center built. We've had projects that we can plan and get underway from these revenues that flow from right now LNG Canada, but what will flow from Cedar LNG eventually.
Maureen, just a last question for you. And thanks so much for all of this. I did mention it earlier, just wanted to circle back because it seems to be a bit of the linchpin in this, this bigger discussion. Obviously, there's going to be and already is quite a bit of opposition towards any sort of oil port on the North Coast. And the oil tanker moratorium seems to get rid of that issue at the moment. That would have to be removed or that would be have to be scaled back or more exemptions given. With that there, how crucial do you see that piece of legislation to support and protect a lot of the things you talked about, like the livelihoods and the sustenance that the Haisla and others along the coast still access?
Well, I see that moratorium as having like an extremely high importance in keeping our North Coast in the pristine shape that it's in right now. I don't see being able to do that without that moratorium in place. Just the one thing that is keeping us right now. And there's a threat of it being lifted. I know. I'm aware of that.
Does this ever come up in any of the discussions that you've had with, the federal government? Obviously, that seems the provincial government is supportive. But is this something that is discussed or might be an afterthought?
When we met with them in Prince Rupert, we did ask them to maintain that moratorium, not to lift that. That was a discussion that was held in Prince Rupert, and all the coastal First Nations were united in that request to keep that in place.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.